Welcome to Sidetracks. I'm Mark Greenberg.
All I heard, Buddy Bolden say, funky butt, take it away, funky butt, take it away. Well, now I thought I heard him say.
I don't think that there are too many blues that are complete songs. I always think of blues as like an infinitely long salami. You cut a few slices of blues.
That's Dave Van Ronk, recorded backstage in Burlington, Vermont in 1978. Van Ronk died in 2002, but his distinctive voice lives on in his many recordings and now in a memoir and new CD, both entitled Dave Van Ronk, the Mayor of McDougal Street. The book and CD were compiled and edited by Van Ronk's friend, writer and fellow musician Elijah Wald. Wald's previous books include a biography of bluesman Josh White and a study of bluesman Robert Johnson. Both the book and CD showcase the breadth of Van Ronk's musical interests. According to Wald,
I think it's really hard to say exactly what Dave's significance was because he did so many different things. He started out doing trad jazz. He did blues. He did some amazing interpretations of Bertolt Brecht. And in the end of his life, swing albums. He even did a foray into folk rock. He's most known, certainly, as an influence as a guitar player because he was one of the people who took blues techniques and really mastered them and then applied that to all sorts of other material.
First time I heard fender picking, I assumed it was two guitar players with flat picks. One of them going, bom, 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 the other one playing the melody. Because I had never seen guitar played any other way than with a pick. I had been playing traditional jazz.
His influence was really as a figure. He was this giant. He was 6'3", and he had this huge voice. And he really kind of ruled McDougal Street.
It was a story about a Willie the Weeper. Willie the Weeper was a yen pox eater. Someday appeal to Manny he'll take. I'm dreaming that he's dead, he will forget.
He wanted to do a one-man show called The Mayor of McDougal Street. And he was trying it out on stage and working through a lot of the stories. And it just became obvious to me that this ought to be a book. Almost three of the chapters of the finished book are simply pieces that Dave wrote for the book. And then there are sections of other chapters that he also wrote. His first meeting with Dylan, he actually wrote up longhand. The winter of 1960-61 was a real momser. Snow up to your ear balls and colder than a gravedigger's butt. The afternoons were best. Sitting at a window table at the Figaro, playing chess, gossiping with friends, or just watching the snow, one felt an almost rural sense of peace. But in the circles I was running in, there was an undercurrent of electricity. Clubs and rumors of clubs were popping up everywhere, and it seemed as if every basement and derelict coal bin in the village was about to become yet another coffee house equipped with a stage, all for the greater glory of us. New singers were drifting in almost daily, and the cadre was growing, as my friend Russ Blackwell put it, by creeps and bounders. It became a regular thing. A bunch of us would be sitting in the Figaro or the Kettle, and a colleague would come rushing in to tell us, "Hey, there's a new guy over at," he would name one of the four or five rooms already functioning. "You've got to hear him. He's really something else." And we would all troop off to check out the new phenom. This particular afternoon, the venue was the Café Wa on the corner of McDougal and Minetta. Manny Roth, the manager, had recently instituted a policy of daytime hootenannies with Fred Neal presiding. When we arrived, Fred was on stage with his guitar, and up there with him, playing harmonica, was the scruffiest-looking fugitive from a cornfield I do believe I had ever seen. "Where did he pick up that style of harp blowing? Mars?" I said to my companions. But I liked it. There was a gung-ho, da-da quality to it that cracked me up. Then Fred relinquished the stage, and the kid did a couple of numbers on his own. As I remember, they were Woody Guthrie songs, and his singing had the same take-no-prisoners delivery as his harmonica playing. We were impressed. After the set, Fred introduced us. Bob Dylan, spelled D-Y-L-A-N. "As in Thomas?" I asked innocently. "Right." I may have rolled my eyes heavenward. On the other hand, all of us were reinventing ourselves to some extent, And if this guy wanted to carry it a step or two further, who were we to quibble? I made my first acquaintance with his famous dead fish handshake, and we all trooped back to the kettle for another drink. The coffeehouse mafia had a new recruit.
She went upstairs to make a bed. Not a word.
I decided I wanted to try to find stuff that wouldn't just duplicate what was already on other albums, and basically came up with what I felt was a selection that had everything from a cappella English ballads to jazz bands to solo blues to Brecht to Joni Mitchell.
Rose and flows of angels' hair, ice cream castles in the air.
Both Sides Now, the Joni Mitchell song, was supposed to be Dave's chance at the big time. He had put together a band called the Hudson Dusters, and they released this as their first single, and as he reported, it began catching on in various local markets, and he really smelled a hit. And then Judy Collins came out with her version and simply buried him. But the way Dave did it by himself with just vocal and guitar, I think remains the best reading this song has ever had. And interestingly enough, Joni Mitchell agreed. Joni always said in her interviews that Dave's version of Both Sides Now was her favorite. And in fact, she said she liked it even better than her own.
I've looked at clouds from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow it's clouds.
For most people, the folk revival begins with Bob Dylan, but this is really the book about the world into which Dylan came, and a world that really disappeared shortly after Dylan became a superstar, because, as Dave put it, you know, the big money came in, and suddenly everybody moved out to Woodstock, and this little world of friends starving together in garrets in the village disappeared, and he loved that world. And he remained in his tiny apartment on Sheridan Square and greeted another two generations of young musicians.
Oh, New Orleans is a great big old southern town, where hospitality you will surely find.
Who knows what Bob Dylan would have sounded like had he not spent 6 months as an acolyte and frequent guest in the apartment of Dave Van Ronk. You listen to early Dylan bootleg recordings or that first album and you hear so much Dave Van Ronk in it. As a guitar arranger, I think he's one of the greatest arrangers who ever walked. And as a singer, he's often a textbook in how to phrase a song. And I don't care what kind of music you're in, there are a lot of lessons to be learned by studying Dave. Aside from that, you know, he's just a man who made an awful lot of great music. And now with this book, to me, he has become one of the great chroniclers, not just of the folk scene, but of New York and of Greenwich Village and of that world that he loved, that whole period of the 50s and 60s.
It was just, you know, it was like a constantly in motion, revolving door, kaleidoscope, God knows what. You never knew who was going to turn up. There were so many people, some of the best people, the most talented people, never really got to be especially well-known. Peter Stamfel and the Holy Modal Rounders, Gil Turner, Johnny Cash used to hang around for a while.
And then the scene was over, and there he was back to playing the little clubs. And the major labels, as he puts it, they'd figured out that I was never going to sell a million records, and they stopped coming around. So when the scene shut down, I felt the satisfaction of a Seventh-day Adventist on the day the world really does come to an end. I had to tour a little more than I liked, but between the concerts and some teaching, I was making a reasonable living playing the music I loved, and as the Irishman who fell off the Empire State Building said as he passed the 41st floor, so far, so good. I'm still making my own musical choices, and people have kept coming to the shows and buying the records. Being a musician, even a good musician, is not a ticket to ride. It's a job, and at times it can be very hard work. But then someone will come up and say, hey, Dave, I heard you in 1962 in Samarkand. And that's nice. I never made a fortune. But damn it, this is what I wanted to do, and I've been able to do it for almost 50 years, and I haven't had to do anything else. And what more can I ask? I wanted to be a musician, and I am a musician, and that's what it's all about.
Like a bird on the wire, like a drunk in a midnight choir, I have tried in my way to be free.
Elijah Wald, reading from the posthumous memoir of singer and guitarist Dave Van Ronk. We've also heard excerpts from the new CD, Dave Van Ronk, The Mayor of McDougal Street, Rarities, 1958-69, on the multicultural media Rootstock label in conjunction with Lyricord Discs. For Psytracks, I'm Mark Greenberg.